Hello and welcome to the Big Football Show, a podcast from The Athletic about Big Ten football. This is Scott Docterman, and I mostly cover Iowa. Today, I'm joined by Mitch Sherman, our esteemed Nebraska football writer. We're going to spend most of today's episode talking about the Huskers, from last season's highs and lows to what lies ahead for Scott Frost in year four, and what's going to happen this fall. We'll also spin it around the Big Ten at the end of the episode. As always, we want to thank you, our legends and listeners, for spending some time with us and adding us to your podcasting rotation. Please subscribe, rate, and review us. 5 stars, just like Ari Wasserman's favorite prospects. Mitch, it's a pleasure to have you here today. How are you doing?
I'm well, Scott. It's good to be here with you. It's good to be here in June and have college football back on the horizon. We're like 80 days away from the season, and actually about 7 days sooner for me and the games that I'm going to cover than many of our other writers at The Athletic. I'm looking at late August and a trip to Champaign. It seems like it's right around the corner.
Yeah, and it's a lot better than what it was a year ago this time, where we were wondering, would we have a season at all? I guess we were wondering the same thing in early September as well. But based on where we were with the pandemic last June, we were all sitting here trying to figure out if any sport was going to be playing. Major League Baseball, NFL football, college football. Right. And here we are now counting it all down. And as you mentioned, Scott Frost and the Cornhuskers get a chance to visit Champaign and open the Brett Bielema era a week before everybody else. So that's actually kind of exciting, although the trip is not quite what you originally planned.
No, I was going to Dublin, man. I had the whole thing ready to go. It wasn't booked, didn't have the flight booked, but I was looking at Ireland and starting to check out hotels. And Nebraska actually had a bye week scheduled for week one after the week zero game this year. So the thought of staying in the UK for a few days after the Nebraska Illinois opener was on my mind, and of course, like everything else over the last year and a half, that changed and that was canceled. The Huskers are going to open the 2022 season, though, in Dublin. So not all is lost for Nebraska fans and Nebraska media who wanted to see football overseas, because the Huskers get Northwestern on August 27th, 2022. But in the meantime, yeah, it's book those flights to Chicago or drive to Champaign. I'm ready to be hot in Illinois in the afternoon for an early kick against between Nebraska and the Illini.
Yeah, well, if there was ever a town that had kind of the wrong name, it's Champaign, Illinois. Every time I've stayed there, it's been yucky and gray and dull, and so it's more like Schlitz, Illinois, than Champaign. No, I'm just joking, but no, it's I love the fact that the Big Ten's going with 0 week anyway, that they didn't just try to shoehorn this into the 13th of November, where Nebraska already had it filled anyway at that time with Southeast Louisiana. Now Southeast Louisiana is punted off the schedule. So Fordham, you know, the old
the Fordham Rams.
Yes, old Vince Lombardi himself, right?
He'll be there in spirit.
Yeah. Joe Moorhead was the head coach there before he went to Penn State as the offensive coordinator. So, but getting that week zero, I mean, I think it's really fun for the sport. I think it's great after last year. What's kind of your thoughts about, I mean, are they moving spring or summer practice up a week? And what's kind of the excitement level for that first weekend?
Well, I'm disappointed you didn't choose to break down the week one game against Fordham, but we'll go with Illinois. Yeah, nothing official, but I mean, certainly practice is going to start in Lincoln at the end of July, a week earlier or 5-6 days earlier than it would have in a normal year if the opener was on September 4th. But this has already been in the works. I mean, Nebraska has been scheduled to play Illinois in week zero for quite some time. You know, the game moving from Dublin to Champaign makes it a little easier for Nebraska in some of those preseason preparations. You don't have to plan an international trip in there and determine how many days you spend overseas to get acclimated to the time change. So this is a, you know, like a regular road trip. Of course, Nebraska will go out on Friday, the 27th, and I'd expect that practice is going to start about 30 days before that, so somewhere around July 29th in that range, which is less than a week after Big Ten Media Days. So for my own personal purposes of planning those final days of summer and how to enjoy them, maybe sneak in a few days off, it gets a little more challenging. We'll be in Indy for that weekend before Nebraska starts preseason practice. You know, I mentioned it's going to be hot in Champaign. It's going to be hot in Lincoln at the end of July out there on the grass and on the turf in the stadium. I'm guessing a lot of indoor facility work, but you know, you need to get acclimated, and I'm sure Nebraska will go in the heat in July and August just so they're ready when they have the pads on in Champaign.
Yeah, and speaking of heat, it's already been incredibly hot for this time of year. It just took off and went straight into late July mode, and I don't think it's gonna let up until at least Independence Day. So hopefully we can get a reprieve, but here we are.
I mean, I've got the College World Series on my horizon here in Omaha, and you know, we're looking at 95 degree weather for that thing to get started, and unless there's a break in this heat streak, but. Yeah, I think we can all look forward to that in July and August too, which is obviously pretty normal.
I know this is a football podcast, but I think maybe we should touch on briefly. I mean, the Nebraska baseball team won the Big Ten and looked really good. And then, maybe this is just an extension of all the issues the Big Ten had in football and how it didn't work out correctly and played so late, but but what happened with baseball? Just playing an interior season forced Nebraska to have to go on the road to number one Arkansas and played what, you know, seven innings of the elimination game right toe to toe with them, led for a couple of, what, 2-0 I think early on, and but it also cost a lot of teams a chance. Iowa and Indiana were right on the cusp of getting into the postseason. It hurt softball teams. It hurt other sports by playing just strictly an in-conference schedule. So what's kind of the mood in Nebraska after the baseball season and kind of the thoughts of what happened in the tournament?
Well, baseball is a big thing in Nebraska. You know, it's akin to wrestling over in Iowa or at Penn State. You know, of course, there are other sports that have those kind of followings around the Big Ten that aren't your main two premier sports. Nebraska's like that with volleyball, and as are some other Big Ten programs. And so this one, you know, this month, it was, you know, such a mixed bag of emotions for Nebraska with its baseball program. A lot of pride in what Will Bolt, the coach, in his first full year, the former Husker who played for Dave Van Horn in his playing time. Mm-hmm. Van Horn, of course, is now the coach at Arkansas, which hosted Nebraska in the regional last weekend. Also, a lot of disappointment. I think a lot of resentment back toward the Big Ten, because clearly the Big Ten is what caused this problem for Nebraska and for Michigan and for Maryland, which made the 64-team field, and for Indiana and Iowa, as you mentioned, baseball programs this year that deserved to be in the NCAA postseason but didn't get that opportunity because the selection committee had no data to compare those teams to other programs in the country. The Big Ten... it took up residence with the Ivy League this spring in deciding that it would not play non-conference games in a sport that's played outdoors, you know, through the spring and into the early part of the summer. All of the other power leagues, all of the other mid-major leagues, they played non-conference. They gave the selection committee those data points to be able to compare teams from conference to conference that had common opponents. The Big Ten had zero common opponents with any other league in the country. So if you're the NCAA selection committee, you have nothing to compare that team to. And as Eric Bakich, the coach at Michigan, said after the selection Monday process, he wouldn't have blamed the NCAA if it had taken only one team from the Big Ten, that being Nebraska, the the automatic entry as the league champ for the postseason, because there was just no data. There was nothing to compare this league to, and that's squarely on the Big Ten. Just it was a bad decision. It was the Big Ten just punting on the sport of baseball and the sport of softball this season. You saw the Big Ten and its commitment. Obviously, there's a commitment to basketball. I mean, we know that it's a marquee sport for the league, but the whole thing was handled completely different. With the way that the league approached non-conference opportunities, and then that showed in the way that the postseason was seeded and put together. So for Nebraska, ultimately it cost the Huskers a chance to host in June, and the end result was Nebraska going to Arkansas, the number one team in the country, and to their credit, the Huskers didn't hang their heads. They put up a great fight. They went toe-to-toe with the Hogs in front of 11,000 people. They won the second game of the head-to-head between those two teams, forced it to a winner-take-all Monday. As you said, we're ahead early. We're tied 2-2 in the eighth inning, and Arkansas scored 4 runs. Things fell apart for Nebraska on the mound a bit in that eighth inning, and the season is over. So, but there's a lot of optimism about what's ahead. You know, it's just confounding that the Big Ten, 1 year after Michigan went to the College World Series finals against Vanderbilt and came within one victory of winning the national championship, that the Big Ten had this attitude about a sport that has been emerging and has been gaining momentum. You had Indiana in the College World Series a few years ago. I mentioned Michigan. Obviously, Omaha sits within the footprint of the Big Ten Conference. This is the longtime home of the College World Series. And the league showed just a an inability or a reluctance to support baseball here during the pandemic.
Yeah, it was poor. It was poor planning all the way around. I look at men's and women's basketball had non-conference games, and this was still at the height of the pandemic. At least there were no vaccines at that point, and yet Iowa's playing Iowa State, and Nebraska's playing Creighton and other teams. There's the ACC Big Ten Challenge. And basketball, there's a lot more close contact. I mean, there's a lot of sweating on each other. There's face-to-face guarding. I mean, just all that versus baseball and softball, where it's pretty much built for social distancing, except for the batter and the catcher and the umpire behind him. So I felt like, and then the schedule was released so late.
Yes.
It was done without any kind of forethought at all. And it cost teams. It cost Nebraska. If Nebraska may not have been one of the top 16 seeds, however, it may have gone to the number 21. You know, it might have been 21, and it might have gone to the, 14, 13, 12, whatever seed, instead of number one overall. That's awfully, that just makes Nebraska look like it's just a team that got in instead of a very good team, which what it was. It hurt teams that had an opportunity to get to the postseason, Iowa being among them, one game away from being there. So I think overall this was a failure of a year by the Big Ten in so many different ways. And it's not even a, can you look back and learn from this? This is bad. And it really, either the athletic directors need to make some forceful decisions, or some things need to change within the conference to ensure not only does this not happen again, but that this is not a detriment to the league going forward in all of these sports.
Yeah, you know, there's no good timing to have a pandemic. It's terrible whenever it occurs, and in no way in this discussion are we trying to minimize, you know, the priority of safety for student athletes, for coaches, for officials, for fans. But the Big Ten's lack of experience in key leadership positions could not have been more poorly timed. If Kevin Warren, as the commissioner, was 5 years into his tenure when this kind of a situation arose, I think the Big Ten would have been much more well-equipped to come to decisions that best served everyone, as opposed to what happened. And the fact that he was right at the beginning, and you had a great leader in the conference like Jim Phillips, who was on his way out at Northwestern. Now, he was there for most of this. You have Barry Alvarez, who is on his way out at Wisconsin. this stuff, it just didn't line up well for the Big Ten in terms of leadership. I think Jim Delaney would have handled this last year in a different way. He was an extremely strong leader. You know, had conviction in his decisions. Had the rest of college athletics had confidence that Jim Delaney was going to do the right things when it came to football or basketball, and even in the sports that the Big Ten has not traditionally succeeded in, he was a trusted voice and a trusted visionary. So it's been rough for sure these last 10-11 months for the league, and you know, let's hope moving forward that the Big Ten can learn from what has happened in the 2020-21 academic year and put its best foot forward as you know, we get past this stuff.
Yeah, and then there are other issues that'll be discussed, you know, really even this month in a week or two, and we'll get to those kind of at the end of the episode, which is NIL and college football playoff expansion, both of which are going to happen. It's just a matter of when as opposed to, you know, if. But really the best part to have you on here, Mitch, is to take a look at the Huskers and year four now with Scott Frost. I think everybody in the Big Ten was aware when Scott Frost was hired that, you know, the prodigal son returns home. I mean, he had a 12-0 season and a big-time bowl win over Auburn in his, you know, what, second year, I believe it was, at UCF. It looked like he was going to be able to come and restore Nebraska, if not to, you know, heights, you know, certainly into wins against, league competition, divisional competition, and then take Nebraska in a winning area. It hasn't quite happened yet. Granted, the pandemic has kind of turned everything upside down. But looking at year four, and you put together your state of the program on this program, what can we expect, and what are the expectations of Nebraska under Scott Frost entering this season?
Well, if you talk to Bill Moose, the athletic director at Nebraska, the expectations or what's realistic is for the Huskers to win 8 or 9 games here in year four. And that was a proclamation that Moose made a couple of months ago in an interview on his radio show. Surprised, I think, a few people around the state of Nebraska that he went out on that limb. But, hey, you know, it's time. It's time for Nebraska to have those kind of expectations, to feel that is realistic. This is no longer a transition for Scott Frost and his staff. They are into the thick of this with their players, the guys that they recruited, the guys that they have had an opportunity to develop. And if you're not in a position at Nebraska to be able to have those expectations that this is a team that should consistently win, we're not talking about national championships. We're not talking about Big Ten championships. We're right. Talking about a team that can consistently win, that can be in contention for a division championship. If you don't have those expectations, what are we doing? You know, where is this thing going? So while it may have been somewhat of a shock to the system after 12 wins in 3 years to hear the athletic director say it's realistic to go for 8 or 9 in year four, that's what it should be. And if you can't accept that, if that's not what your vision is, then you need to take a hard look at what's going on in this program. The fact that we are here in year four and there are some who feel that 8 or 9 wins is outside the realm of being realistic, I think that speaks significantly to the lack of progress that has occurred on the field, because off the field, there's been progress. There has been improvements in the way that Nebraska develops its players. There's been improvements in recruiting. There's been improvements in other areas of the program as far as the resources and the way that Nebraska supports its players, but they haven't shown up on the field. And what Bill Moose was saying with those comments is now it's time for it to show up on the field.
And he's right. A place like Nebraska, again, I know the state and the school that I cover, there are a lot of people who like to thumb their nose across the Missouri River. And it works both ways, and it's good banter. It leads to rivalries, and it's fun. Sometimes it's a little overwhelming, but that's what college football is all about. But a place like Nebraska with its tradition, with its history, and I think you're right that very few only the crazy old timers are really expecting them to go 12-0 and win a national title anytime soon. But there is a reality that when you have a stadium, when you have that kind of history, when you have those resources, their tradition, you're spending it on the coaches, you brought somebody back with that kind of track record, you're recruiting at a higher level than everybody else in the division, and yet you're 3-6 last year, you've lost to every team in the Big Ten West in their most recent game except Purdue, but before beating Purdue, it was all of them. I think that there's a reality that needs to come to play that Nebraska has to start winning these games. And maybe it's not all of them. Maybe it's only half of them. But getting to a bowl game, to me, which it would have been, I mean, that got one coach fired just winning seven games previously, and that was back in 2000s. And then even Bo Pelini, losing only four games every year, that was too low of a standard. I think there needs – that at least getting to a bowl game has to be – kind of the minimum standard, or otherwise they have to take a really strong look at the future of this program.
Yeah, and Nebraska's stuck in a hard place, and Bill Moose is stuck in a hard place because they're committed to Scott Frost long term. We talk about all of these things. This has to happen. This is a requirement. Here's the bare minimum. All those things are valid and they're realistic, but you can always say, well, what if they don't? What if they don't get there? What are they going to do? They're not going to make a change. Hey, if Nebraska goes 2-10, okay, maybe they're going to make a change. But if you continue with this mediocrity that's like a few rungs below the bare minimum, which is where I'd say Nebraska's been in these first 3 years, or at least year two and year three, what do you do? You're building a $155 million facility. It's coming out of the ground right now, set to open in 2023, completely designed for the program that Scott Frost wants. You've put huge amounts of effort into the fundraising for that building, thrown every resource you've got toward building this complex for Scott Frost. All of this is geared for him to have the opportunities to succeed. It's going to take something incredibly drastic for Nebraska to make the decision in the middle of that project, in the middle of this movement, that it needs to go in another direction. I just don't see any way that it's going to happen. You're in this for the long haul, which it becomes painful then for the fan base, the players to find ways to continue to generate momentum. A lot of times, at least I've seen this at Nebraska, and I think this isn't the way it works at Iowa, because it's had such continuity with its coaches going back four decades. But the way it is at Nebraska over the last couple of decades is that, well, hey, when you do make a coaching change, at least then there's new energy, there's new optimism, there's new hope, there's something different on the horizon. And really, as bad as it gets over at least these next couple of years, that's not going to be the case. And ultimately, I think that's good, because Nebraska does need continuity, and it needs to be committed to this project that it's invested in with Scott Frost. So maybe it's going to be painful to find your way to have the best opportunity to get back to respectability and relevance within your own league and your own division. But Nebraska needs to stay committed to that. And, the sooner that they reach this next set of goals, obviously the better.
Yeah. And I think if we go with the worst case scenario, and then I'll just touch on this one briefly, but if it is a 2-10 year, if they do lose the opener to Illinois and maybe win two or three games out of that bunch, I think the message gets sent with the athletic director. I think first, I think that's when, okay, let's make the change at AD, bring somebody else in who then could evaluate the football program. But I think in this case, what makes it doubly difficult is you look at the last, say, three coaches that were let go at Nebraska. Mike Riley was not from Nebraska, had no ties. It was a bad hire, a bad fit all the way around, and that was proven. Bo Pelini wasn't well liked. He was an assistant there for a while before that. Had a good track record, just never really showed up in the big moments. And then Bill Callahan was a terrible hire for a million reasons. Scott Frost is your guy. I mean, is Nebraska's guy. I mean, he's from Nebraska. He played at Nebraska, won championships from there. He's everything that Nebraska fans wanted in a coach. He remembered the old days, but he also wanted to build them towards something new. And I think so there's a lot more emotion maybe tied up with this hire than certainly the other ones, where if the names were changed, if this was Mike Riley after year three, you know, maybe it's okay, this is do or die. Whereas with Scott Frost, it's let's give him some more time. We're frustrated, but you know, it's time to take a step forward, and we think he can, and all the positive rhetoric that is there for somebody like him.
Yeah, you know, they've done the 3-year thing. They've done the you know, we're going to move on after a short period of time. Pelini got 7 years, but Riley got 3. You know, Callahan got 4. They're not going back down that road. This is, and look, Nebraska's not going 2-10 in 2021. This is an improved team. It's an improved program. It's a program that I would say looks worse on paper with the way that games have gone in terms of the results than what is actually happening. And some of that is coaching. When you lose close games consistently with better talent at times than your opponents and equal talent at times to your opponents, then that comes back on the decisions late in the games. It comes back on what's being instilled in these players and how confident they are in those moments. And some of that, you know, it's got to happen organically. It's got to happen, but you only learn how to win by winning. But we've seen it in this Iowa series under Frost. Mm-hmm. They've been close games. They've been down to the wire each year, and every time Iowa's come out on top. And going into the final moments of those games, you know, you tell me if you feel the same way, but I've expected Iowa to find the way to win those games because it's a program in those moments that knows how to do it, and Nebraska's not to that place yet. So that's a difficult place for I think a lot of people to accept that Nebraska is, but it's reality.
Yeah, and I think for me, some of the disconnect in what I've seen from Nebraska up close versus what I've seen from them against other programs is that they play really hard against Iowa. I think they've been well coached in those games. Iowa has had some pretty good teams the last handful of years. You know, they won 9 games, won 10 games. Last year they were 6-2, but playing really well late in the year. So there was those games stand out to me as this is what Nebraska could be. Nebraska could be a bowl team if they can perform at this level. It's the games against Illinois, and it's the games against Minnesota. You know, that you go, what happened here? Why are they – Minnesota doesn't have 33 kids, and they're still, you know, half their lineup are true freshmen, and yet they're beating you. Illinois, did you even show up? You know, but then again, you play – Penn State last year in Iowa and looked like, okay, this team's ready to compete. And I think that goes back to your point of coaching is consistency of message, attitude, everything. Because sure, if they would have had some of the efforts that they've had against Iowa, say the last 3 years, because they've all either come down to the end of the game in the last 3 years, if they would have had those against Minnesota or in Illinois, I think maybe it would have gone to a bowl game by now.
I think I speak for a lot of people who follow the program closely when, you know, looking specifically at that Illinois game a year ago, 41-23, Illinois comes into Lincoln and dominates Nebraska really from the beginning of that game when there were poor decisions made. There was a poor decision made on how to operate the first play. You know, we remember Luke McCaffrey throwing the ball backwards and it's a turnover and then the defense is uninspired. And there was talk after that game by Nebraska players, and I don't know if this is just them thinking they're supposed to say this because it's what they've heard other, you know, pro players say or it's just how they think they're supposed to answer. But you heard comments like, you know, we had a letdown after beating Penn State a week ago. How? What do you mean? Like, who had not arrived? You beat a winless Penn State team. What are you talking about? You had a letdown. I mean, do you see these teams out there that you're striving to be who are consistent week in, week out? I mean, you're not trying to be Alabama or Clemson and win all your games. You're trying to be like Iowa or Wisconsin or Northwestern. teams that give the same effort week after week after week. So how do you have a letdown? How do you have a bad week of practice after a decent performance in a win against Penn State that could have been a spark plug for you, that could have buoyed your season and gotten you over a hump as a program? Instead, you do so. Those are the things that I think frustrate people so much, that you hear those kind of comments, like they're like, "Well, we had a bad week of practice because we were content with that win against Penn State." it's just not the way it should work.
Yeah, right. And it shouldn't work for any program, frankly. And at Nebraska, that's a hollow excuse. You know, that's not a reason. It's not like you beat the number one team in the country and fell down. I mean, you beat a winless Penn State team that wasn't very good. So those excuses kind of have to dry up from now on. But that said, you know, I feel like I've been the negative Nelly here on all this. I actually think that they have the best roster the Nebraska's had since 2016 under Mike Riley's second year. And I think they have the best roster that they've had under Scott Frost. And the schedule up until the final month is conducive enough outside of one game to where they can actually make a run and be very competitive in not only in the divisional race, but getting to a bowl game. I love the way the defense looks. I think it's improved and they got a ton of guys back. And I also like the quarterback. He's had some consistency issues from time to time, but I think he was like 18 of 20 in the Iowa game, Adrian Martinez. He's not the Heisman guy that everybody kind of thought a couple years ago, but I think there's a lot there. And the fact that Luke McCaffrey transferred out of the program kind of shows you that it seems to me anyway, it's Adrian Martinez's team, you know, ride or die. I mean, what's kind of your thoughts on the quarterback and how far could he take this offense?
Yeah, he's a great leader. And you know, people are going to be critical of him because of some of the things that have happened on his watch with the offense. Nebraska was not an explosive offense a year ago. It didn't have playmakers at the running back spot. It had difficulty throwing the ball down the field. Martinez was very good with his completion percentage. You mentioned the Iowa game where he hit basically all of his passes, but they weren't big plays. They weren't stretching the field. He was accurate, but even moving the chains was difficult in the times where Nebraska needed to do it last year against good opponents and even mediocre opponents like Minnesota and Illinois. So there needs to be an upgrade there. You can look at Adrian Martinez, and I think you can make a case that he's the second best returning quarterback in the Big Ten behind Michael Penix. And then you can look at Adrian Martinez and the Nebraska quarterback situation, and you can say, well, they're like eighth or ninth in the league in terms of what you would expect out of them if you're basing it specifically on past results. So it's unusual with a fourth year starter to find that wide of a variance in how things could go. A lot of it, I think, depends on the pieces around him. And the biggest thing that Nebraska did in spring practice, the most important thing, the best thing it did, was it upgraded those wide receivers. Mm-hmm. And no longer is Nebraska sending out the 5'9", 5'10" core wide receivers that Troy Walters, the former offensive coordinator, seemed to favor in, you know, and he was that kind of guy, and he won the Biletnikoff Award at Stanford and went to the NFL as a smaller receiver. And then he thrived at Nebraska early in his first year with guys like J.D. Spielman. And then it moved on to Wandale Robinson, who was a smaller guy. Well, they're all gone. Robinson is transferred to Kentucky, which is a loss for Nebraska, but they've replaced him with Oliver Martin. They've replaced him, you know, the former Iowa and Michigan receiver. Mm-hmm. They replaced him with Omar Manning, a 6'4", 225-pound guy who looks like he plays for the Dallas Cowboys. They've got to tap into that potential. He was unavailable a year ago to even get on the field. They've replaced him with Samari Toure, the FCS transfer, who's 6'2", 6'3", and a clear leader among this group of receivers. So they're different looking at the wide receiver position for sure this year, and that should be a huge boost to Martinez. He has guys to throw to who can go up and get the ball, who can stretch the field. We will see. We'll see if what happened in the spring translates to the fall. We'll see on August 28th if Nebraska can throw the ball down the field and make plays with its wide receivers and with its tight ends, who are also upgraded in this offense. Austin Allen and Travis Vokolek are big, rangy guys who can do a lot of things at that position. So there should be a different look with this Nebraska offense and its passing game this year, even if the completion percentage numbers aren't up in the 70s like we saw last year. Mm-hmm. If they can stretch the field and they can develop some kind of a running game with the running backs, who are a big question going into the season, this offense should be better. It should be more efficient. It should be more productive. And then they can rely on the defense to win games. The offense has to hold its own, though. Defensively, you didn't ask me about this, but and I'll get back to you here. But defensively, they are much improved. Well, they were much improved last year, and they're going to pick up, it would seem, where they left off in 2020.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I'm intrigued by Marquez Stepp. You know, he was, you know, he's from Indiana. I know Iowa and Notre Dame were really in on him, and then he went to USC, and now he's transferring to Nebraska. I like the receivers. It's just, I think over the years we've seen Nebraska have some great athletes. J.D. Spielman, you brought up, Wandale Robinson, some others on the outside that really, they flashed at different times. DeMornay Personnel, even, you know, they've flashed, and then they've kind of gone away, and then they transfer in a lot of cases, and that's, I'm sure that's got to be really frustrating for Nebraska fans, because you get your emotions wrapped up in a certain player and then he leaves. And Wandale Robinson was kind of like that proverbial Swiss Army knife. But in some ways, did that hold Nebraska back, having players that could do multiple things but not really excel at one specific thing, and kind of kept the offense weirdly stagnant, having that kind of versatility?
You know, you live and you die by the transfers in this day and age of college football. And, you know, while Nebraska's lost a ton of guys, all of those receivers that I mentioned with Martin and Manning and Toure, they all came via the transfer portal. You know, same thing with Marquez Stepp, the running back who you mentioned. And Marquez Stepp had a setback in the spring and had to have surgery from an injury that was left over from his time at USC. We'll see if he goes into the fall, into preseason camp, still as the favorite to win that running back spot. I think that after the spring, a guy to watch, and this is not a name that's known around the Big Ten, but true freshman Gabe Irvin, out of Georgia, he was impressive and was versatile in his time on the field in the spring. He's going to get an opportunity to be the guy who carries the ball. Nebraska needs three guys to carry the ball. That's the plan for running backs coach Ryan Held, and that's what Scott Frost wants. They need versatile guys who can catch it out of the backfield, who can protect Adrian Martinez, and who can pick up first downs. And Gabe Irvin showed the ability to do all of those things as a true freshman, early enrollee. You know, kind of like what people in Iowa saw with Keegan Johnson, the receiver out of Bellevue West, who was so impressive for the Hawkeyes in the spring. Gabe Irvin was kind of the guy like that on the offensive side for Nebraska in May and April and May. So keep an eye on him. Keep an eye on Stepp. Keep an eye on Jacquez Yant, the big back out of Tallahassee who earned a scholarship after spring. I mean, he's a thumper, 245 pounds. You know, he can definitely thrive in this Big Ten, you know, the physicality of the Big Ten. When they get into November and the schedule turns tough, like you mentioned, that's when – you know, it's going to be beneficial to have a guy like Yant. That's when it's going to be beneficial to have that physical defense with all of those sixth-year seniors. And for Nebraska, hopefully an improved special teams. Special teams has been an area under Scott Frost that has suffered so much, and it's been a focus this offseason. I think finally it's been a focus. Somehow it wasn't for the first 2 years, especially after the first season. It was puzzling not for Nebraska not to focus as much on that, but they've put Mike Dawson, the outside linebackers coach, in charge of special teams. He's on the field with the players. You know, they've got a scholarship punter. They've got an all Big Ten kicker. They seem to have some good return specialists. They found, it would appear, a freshman who can handle kickoffs and get them out of the end zone. So, you know, guys like Amir Smith-Marset aren't racing down the field returning kickoffs for touchdowns, you know, and some others in the Big Ten did the same thing. So the pieces are there for Nebraska offensively, defensively, and on special teams to have a winning season. But again, it's all got to be put into place, and they've got to produce on Saturdays.
You know, if there's one area that I've kind of noticed over the span of Nebraska's entry into the Big Ten, which we're 3 weeks and one day, I think, from the anniversary, the 10-year anniversary of when they made it official. But It's really line of scrimmage play. And I think that's probably the difference that I've seen between Wisconsin and Iowa and even Minnesota and Nebraska, is just how developed and how that's such a primary principle at those schools. And that's how they've been successful all the years. And Nebraska has kind of been inconsistent, whether it's even fundamentals and techniques to performance. What do you think of the offensive line? Is the offensive line capable of going toe-to-toe with those teams and then Ohio State and the first Saturday in November and holding its own, being competitive, or is that going to be a real tough area for the Huskers this year?
Well, you know, we haven't even mentioned the Oklahoma game on September 18th. You know, we've made kind of passing reference to it, that there was that one game out there in the early part of the schedule that's not really winnable for Nebraska. And, of course, that's Oklahoma. I don't expect Nebraska's offensive line to go into that Oklahoma game and dominate the line of scrimmage. I don't expect Nebraska to dominate the line of scrimmage against Wisconsin or Ohio State or Iowa. But 4 years into the development of this thing with Greg Austin, the offensive line coach, and now Matt Lubick in his second year as the offensive coordinator, Nebraska is undoubtedly better up front than it was at the beginning of this thing. There's depth, there's physicality, there's athleticism at the key positions on the offensive line. Cam Jurgens as a center, you saw all of his problems in the Iowa game last year when he got the yips and those snaps were going all over the place. He swears that's a thing of the past. And if it is a thing of the past, he is as athletic and can be as dominant as any center in college football. You know, I'm not going to say that about a lot of Nebraska players. I'm not going to put a lot of Nebraska players on par with, you know, the top guys in the SEC and say, this guy can go toe-to-toe. You put him in the NFL combine, he's going to look just as good. Cam Jurgens is that guy as a center. But he's got to be able to snap the ball to his quarterback. I think he could probably do that this year. If he can, look out, because he's an all Big Ten caliber player. Nebraska has a potential first round pick at left tackle with Turner Corcoran, who's a true freshman and started in the season finale a year ago. So there is some high end talent on that offensive line. Bryce Benhart at right tackle, former 4-star signee out of Minnesota, has had his ups and downs in his first period of time, his first year as a starter, full-time starter last year, but he's another guy with a lot of high-end potential. And then there's depth there. There's older guys like Matt Sichterman moving into a spot where he's going to start at guard. They've got 9 or 10 players on that offensive line who can play, including Ezra Miller. I'm going to bring up all of the Iowa transfers for you. former Hawkeye, who's now in Lincoln and is a key backup on the offensive line, plays guard and tackle for the Huskers. So there is size, there is depth, there is physicality. There is the ability to get it done as a strong team in run and pass blocking. So I think it's one of the areas over the last, let's go, you know, year and a half that has improved the most, maybe the area that has improved the most for Nebraska roster-wide.
Okay. Defense, I saw significant improvement year over year last year. Not only the statistics certainly bear it out, but so does just performance and the small things, the techniques, the drive, all those things. And granted, they had some letdowns and they had some bad games, but they also had some decent games. And I think they have maybe one of the better players on defense in the Big Ten in JoJo Doman. What, you know, right now, is this the type of defense that can keep Nebraska in games, you know, especially against even competition, to enable that offense to grow and be able to win games in the fourth quarter?
If that's the way they coach this team, then yes. If they slow down the tempo a bit on offense, I mean, you see what Iowa and Wisconsin do to allow their defenses to succeed. First of all, they build a strong special teams unit so that the field position is not always tilted against them when they get on the field with defense. And that's what Nebraska is striving to do and continues to strive to do. And then on the offensive side, they don't turn it over. They put their defense in positions to be able to be successful and, you know, again, have that field tilted in their favor. So Nebraska has to be committed to winning with its defense in order to do it. This isn't a defense that's full of future NFL players at every position, and you can just throw them out there at the 50-yard line, average field position, and expect them to pitch a shutout. They still need to be put in positions to succeed. So that starts at the coaching level, and it's how you're going to coach your offense. It's how you're going to rely on your special teams. And then if that works out and they're a team that's built to allow their defense to lead, then 100% yes, this is the kind of a defense that can be strong and can lead this team and can win games for this team. You mentioned Doman. I'll mention Cam Taylor-Britt at the corner spot. I think he also was one of the better players in the Big Ten going into this season. So those two right there, you know, Ty Robinson as a guy up front has that kind of high-end potential. Nebraska has Luke Reimer at inside linebacker, another guy with an NFL future most likely who has the similar potential. Chris Kolarvik, transfer from UNI, a big-time player who, with the injury to Will Honus at the end of spring for Nebraska, is going to step into a starting spot. Two sixth-year seniors at the safety positions, a fifth-year junior and Damian Daniels in the middle at nose tackle. So there's a lot there. Ben Stilley, a sixth-year senior for Nebraska at defensive end, who can be a key pass rusher. You have Garrett Nelson as an outside linebacker who's done a lot in his 2 years in the program. There's a lot there. There's a lot more there on the defensive side that's proven than there is anywhere else on the field for Nebraska. So it needs to be, especially early in the season, the phase of this team that leads Nebraska and allows them to stay in games and have opportunities to win at the end.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. I do think this is a team that's capable of doing all of those things. Now, will it? That's where coaching steps in, and that's where, you know, how has this affected Scott Frost? Maybe not his staff, but certainly Scott Frost 4 years in, to not have this, you know, to walk in and, you know, hopefully the opponents are working it about us, that now he's had to try to time to build this program. Have you seen any changes in him as a head coach?
Oh, that's a great question, and I wish I had a better answer for you, because, you know, he's not a guy that the public gets really close to and is able to see. There are the media opportunities that we get. You know, Scott is on the field at the camps that are open to the public, but he's pretty close to the vest on, you know, how we know that he cares a great deal. There's never any question about that. There may have been questions about that with Bill Callahan or with Mike Riley, but this is a guy whose life has for decades revolved around football, and in particular Nebraska football. You know, even when he was at Oregon, you know, he cared deeply about Nebraska football and continues, of course, to do that to this day. But you know, it can't be easy, and you know, he's at times you know, cracked the door on shedding some light about how this difficult start for him has impacted him. But it eats at him. It's you know, he wanted to come back to Nebraska and produce a team that could make everyone proud, and he wanted to do it you know, for Tom Osborne, and he wanted to do it for the people in Nebraska, and he wanted to do it, you know, for his parents, whose own blood, sweat, and tears has been poured into the University of Nebraska. And, you know, Scott lost his dad, Larry, last year. And so, you know, of course, that was so tough for him. You know, so much of these 3 years has just been a grind, and you know, there's been a lot of pain, and you know, you know, losing games does not compare to losing your father. And I'm kind of grouping this all together, but I'm just trying to paint the picture that it's been a rough time. It's been a difficult time for Scott Frost to live out what ultimately was a dream of his to be the coach of this team and the leader of this program. So, you know, sometimes I guess be careful what you wish for. You know, it was easier for him to run a program in Orlando that had some of the things working for them that they did at UCF. But this is, you know, this is what he wanted. This is what he's dreamed of. This is where the great rewards are for him personally and professionally if he can get this thing turned around. But it has not been easy over these 40, 41 months or so since he took this job.
Yeah. Well, let's take a quick peek at the schedule, and then we'll kind of peel around the rest of the Big Ten briefly. And number one, we talked about the game against Illinois, and my only disappointment was that wasn't a primetime game. Now, I'm sure most of our former friends at newspapers are thrilled that's the case, but
I'm okay with it.
Yeah, right. Now, the older we get, the better it is. But no, but seriously, I think that this is a tone-setting game for both programs. I mean, mm-hmm. Bielema's going to want to play Bielema ball, you know, line it up and run fullback and two tight ends and be real physical and set a tone. And of course, Nebraska needs to get off to a good start. So I think this could set the tone for either team's season, no matter how much for the result, certainly, but just to the style of play and the way that each team plays.
Yeah, it's a huge game. And you know, if Nebraska comes out of this game with a win, I think the likelihood that it reaches a bowl game at the end of the season is well above 50%, because you've got a road win and you're in the conference. If Nebraska loses this game at the start of the season, that likelihood it dips down below 50%. So there's so much. It's interesting that there's so much riding on a week zero game, and usually you don't see that in these kind of games. And you know, even if they are in conference, but this is different in that way. And you know that you have in the back of your mind when this game kicks off what happened a year ago in Lincoln when Nebraska was outclassed by an outgoing coach at Illinois. And you think, all right, so now they've got this new energy with Bielema. How does that factor into August 28th? For Nebraska, it just can't. You're playing a coach who's coaching his first game. They're going to be swimming in it. That's just the way it is. I think back to Scott Frost's first game at Nebraska, and you know, it was that Colorado game, and they got off to a bad start. And yes, there was a lot of energy and momentum because of the excitement from the new coach. But this is a fourth-year program going against a guy who's in his first game as coach. So Nebraska has to win that game. It's plain and simple.
And it's fascinating because I think Illinois had more super seniors than any other program. You know, it was a hard-hitting defense, as hard a hitting defense as I saw all year. Also wasn't that good of a team, and they do have returned Brandon Peters, a quarterback. But then, you know, playing Fordham right off, I think that's a win. You know, I don't even think we need to talk about it. But
right.
Buffalo would have been fascinating with Lance Leopold, but, you know, now that he's at Kansas, I don't know that – because that was the type of game we've seen it year after year after year. Matt Coach, who's kind of discussed for big jobs – goes on the road and beats a Big Ten team and kind of, okay, stamps his ticket to the next destination. But I don't think that's going to be quite the same situation as before. I do think Nebraska is the better team and Nebraska should win that game. Then going to see OU, and I'm glad this game is taking place. That was somewhat in danger a few months ago. What's kind of been the thought, the feedback in the Lincoln and Omaha areas for a game that for 50 years from the game of the century? It just, of course, the kickoff time seems to be a problem for some people in Oklahoma.
Yeah, we're not even going to go down the rabbit hole of the talks about canceling this game. That's another episode of the Big Football Show. Yeah, and the same thing with the kickoff. Like Joe Castiglione, the Oklahoma athletic director, was upset that he couldn't get a night game in Norman on September 18th. Instead, it's the big noon kickoff on Fox, and that's Fox's primetime game. You know, you're going to have Gus Johnson there. It's going to be fun. And I spent about 5 minutes worrying about that controversy. So the important thing to know about the Oklahoma game is that Nebraska is going to be playing a top five team, and you're going to have Spencer Rattler at quarterback, who is probably he is a Heisman candidate in his second year as a starter at Oklahoma, because that's what Oklahoma quarterbacks do and who they are. And it's going to be a real test, maybe the first big time test, or certainly the you would expect that to be the first big time test for this tested Nebraska defense, this experienced Nebraska defense. They're going to have their hands full that day. I don't expect Nebraska to come out of Norman with a win, but it's important to show well. It's important not to lose, 42-10 on that day, and then you go into Big Ten play the following week at Michigan State, feeling good about yourself. Presumably, hopefully, in a decent scenario at 3-1 to start Big Ten play with what's a pretty manageable start to the conference schedule at Michigan State, rebuilding program. You got Northwestern on October 2nd in Lincoln, a team that lost a ton from a year ago. And then Michigan comes into Lincoln as another team that's right. just in the throes of uncertainty and upheaval after a really tough year in the pandemic.
Right. I was going to say that that 4-week stretch is going to determine everything about this season for Nebraska. You know, at Michigan State, Northwestern at home, Michigan at home, and then at Minnesota. I think, you know, Nebraska has an opportunity to win all of those games. I'm not saying they will, but Michigan State looked horrific at times last year and then won games that they shouldn't have won. I mean, they beat Northwestern and then they lose 49-7 at Kinnick. Northwestern lost a ton. I think it seems to me to be a treading water year for the Wildcats, even though I should kick myself in the head every year for saying stuff like that, because they always find a way to, you know, just go from being an also-ran to a champion. But I do think they lost too much on that defense to really be a championship caliber team. Michigan played more poorly through the last couple of weeks of the season before they completely punted than any team in the league. And I think anybody could have beaten them in late November, early December. And then finally at Minnesota, today I would say Minnesota's the better team, but I'd also say they're not that much better to where somebody can't, you know, Nebraska can't go there and win. So if Nebraska's 3-1 at that point, you know, at worst, you get a split out of those four games. And if not, if you go 3-1 again, then you're 6-2 heading down the stretch and you feel pretty good about yourself.
Right. I mean, that Minnesota game is such a wild card because Nebraska has not played well against the Gophers, especially the last couple of years or exactly the last couple of years with Scott Frost as coach. I think if those weeks before Minnesota go well, and Nebraska has the two home games right before that with Northwestern and Michigan, and those games both, as you said, are winnable. If those go well, then I would expect Nebraska to go up to Minneapolis and play like a good team. But if things go poorly at home for Nebraska on October 2nd and October 9th, then you get into the snowball effect, and I mean that figuratively, although there may be snowballs on the field on October 16th at Minneapolis. That's when you have the potential for your season to unravel. So I agree. It's a defining stretch for Nebraska, those first 4 weeks of the conference season, because you could go 4-0, you could go 2-2, you could go 1-3, and it's as important as that opener is. You know, obviously a 4-week period of games is going to be even more crucial in defining the way that your season turns out. So after that, Purdue at home, winnable yeah. game, and then you get into the really tough stuff. You got Ohio State at home, not a winnable game. It just isn't. Yeah. You go to Wisconsin, and you have Iowa at home to finish. So, you know, my thoughts on those final 3 weeks are that, you know, the Big Ten schedule makers aren't getting a Christmas card from Nebraska for the way that that final stretch is put together. And if the Huskers go into November needing victories to get to bowl eligibility, then wow, it's going to be a rough off season. There is ample opportunity for Nebraska to have 6 or 7 wins before the Buckeyes even set foot inside Memorial Stadium. So if that's the case, then you can weather whatever happens in November and make a successful season out of 2021, you know, perhaps with a win over Iowa on Black Friday to top things off. I mean, that's attainable, as we've seen over the past 3 years. So, you know, what do you think about the way that it's not 3 weeks. There's an off week built in there on November 13th, but those final three games over 4 weeks shape up.
I think that's critical to kind of the exclamation point to the season. I think the meat of the season is what we kind of discussed, and then you could throw in the Purdue game and where they sit. If they are in, let's say they're 5-4 after Purdue, or, you know, then you win one out of your last three. If they've lost four, it means that they've played somewhat poorly against teams that are at or below the standard of their three final opponents. So if you're losing to Illinois, if you're losing to, well, the way Michigan played last year, then it doesn't give you a whole lot of hope that you can go out and have a good game against the other three. However, if you're 6-3 or 7-2, sure, I don't see any reason why, if Nebraska's playing well, it can't compete to the end of the game against Wisconsin or Iowa. Camp Randall's a tough place to play, no doubt, but it's not playing in Alcatraz or anything either. And then likewise, you know, we've seen it the last 3 years. Nebraska has held its own, and that would be a real positive cap to Nebraska's season if it could get, you know, win a trophy game, beat a rival, get into bowl, you know, bowl eligibility, or even, you know, improve your bowl slotting by beating a team like Iowa to end the season. I think it's possible. I wouldn't predict it today, but I wouldn't also I wouldn't just dismiss it offhandedly that it won't happen. It's just, but I do think things have to work, and I think there needs to be a lot more consistency on offense. I think the defense has to play well. But I do see 6 or 7 wins if they can make strides in those areas.
I think for all that we've talked about, what it all boils down to is get to 6-3 on Halloween. You got that Purdue game on October 30th at home. If you wake up on Sunday morning and get ready to go trick-or-treating and Nebraska's 6-3, then things are okay for Scott Frost and for this program. Even with Ohio State looming the following Saturday on the schedule, if you're 6-3, you've got an opportunity to win a couple more games, to be in a couple more games, to go to the postseason. You have weathered the storm, and you're doing something better. But anything less than that, it's time to start, clenching those teeth and just like not feeling good about things in November.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I almost feel like, especially in the sport of football, any kind of prediction almost has to have an asterisk, which is injuries. You know, injuries are kind of the unknown quotient in these fractions or these seasons, because you just don't know what could happen. I mean, if Nebraska loses 6 starters to an injuries, then that may completely impact the season. It may not matter in the outcome to what people think of Scott Frost or Bill Moose or whatever, but it does impact the season negatively in a way. And then it's likewise, if you don't have any, then that usually can be the difference in even games. So,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, we can kind of close with that talk about injuries, and I'll just mention that there are a couple of major ones already for Nebraska since we've gone through things. I mentioned Will Honus earlier, the sixth year senior inside linebacker, leading tackler over the past 2 seasons for Nebraska, suffered a really sad injury, has had previous knee injuries. Now he has another one. His future, I'd say, is somewhat in doubt. He's out indefinitely after surgery. Happened right at the end of spring. And then Thomas Fedoni, the 4-star tight end from Council Bluffs, Iowa, who was recruited by everyone around the country and signed with the Huskers as an early enrollee, also suffered a knee injury late in the spring that's going to knock him out for a good portion of the season, you know, maybe half of the season, maybe more. Do you bring back a true freshman who, you know, probably isn't ready for all of the physical rigors of the Big Ten and ask him to play coming off of a serious knee injury? I don't know. Maybe you just cash in your chips and say get ready for 2022. But he has looked okay. I've seen Thomas a couple of times since the surgery and is walking around well without a knee brace. So maybe he's on his road to a fast recovery. But that's what's going on right now on the injury front for Nebraska.
Yeah, that'd be tough to ask a true freshman to do that. But
right.
Well, it's been great talking to you, Mitch. And we used to talk every week during game weeks, and hopefully we'll talk a lot more this fall. So as always, we wanted to thank you, our legends and listeners, for spending time with us and adding us to your podcasting rotation. Please subscribe, rate, and review us. For Mitch Sherman, this is Scott Docterman, and we'll talk to you soon.